It's time for Windows Weekly. Paul Thurrott and Mary Jo Foley are here. And it feels like it's been weeks since Steve Ballmer resigned. It's just been a few days. Mary Jo had an exclusive interview with him. The inside story of the Steve Ballmer departure at Microsoft coming up next on Windows Weekly.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Windows Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Windows Weekly with Paul Thurrott and Mary Jo Foley, episode 326, recorded August 29th, 2013. Bye-bye, Ballmer. Windows Weekly is brought to you by Netflix. Watch thousands of TV episodes and movies on your PC, your Mac, your iPad, your iPhone, or your TV instantly, all streamed directly to you, saving you time, money, and hassle. For your free 30-day trial, visit netflix.com/twit. It's time for Windows Weekly, the show where we cover the latest from Redmond, Washington. I say that because all of the city of Redmond is devoted now to Microsoft Corporation. Every single citizen of the town works on campus. But here's two people who don't. Mary Jo Foley from allaboutmicrosoft.com. Paul Thurrott from the Windows Super site. Good to see you both. Mary Jo, scoop-a-rama. Hot scoop. And I can't believe I'm looking at the rundown.
What have you done?
I'm looking at the rundown. You understand that you haven't done a show since Ballmer quit, right?
We only did the special. We did a little special.
You did the special. Thank you.
Yep.
And maybe you've talked it all out, but this is the first Windows Weekly since Steve Ballmer announced that he was stepping down as CEO of Microsoft, and it's not in the rundown.
It is in the rundown.
That's item three.
We've had such a busy week otherwise.
This will not stand. I'm not going to let you get away with that. We got to know. Inquiring Minds. First of all, how did you get that interview with Mr. B? You hadn't interviewed him in years. In fact, as far as I know, you were persona non grata on the Microsoft campus.
Yeah, 20 years, but who's counting?
20?
I was.
20?
Yeah.
Wow, that's longer than most marriages. So what happened? Did they call you and say Steve has something to say?
Yep, that's exactly what happened.
And did you know at the time what he was going to say?
They called me last Friday morning, right when they were releasing the news about him retiring, and they said, "You're going to get 15 minutes with him. You've been asking us for years, so you're going to get it today."
That is fabulous.
I know. Yeah.
That is fabulous.
Better late than never, right?
And by the way, you were quoted everywhere because I would think they gave other people the 15 minutes, but you got the quotes.
Actually, they gave me and one other person the 15 minutes.
Really?
They gave Seattle Times the 15 minutes because that's Microsoft's hometown paper.
Yes,
so they always
get
him.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, I'm impressed.
Can I just interject one thing though? Because I think that a lot of people may have missed the fact that my hair looks insane for some reason. But
Paul, I understand you're jealous, but really, that's even more petty.
Sorry, that's not what I wanted to say. Mary Jo's interview with Steve Ballmer takes place over the course of two articles. And anyone who has not read that needs to read that immediately because of both of them. Because there's information in there that is just outright new information.
Absolutely. And I and many others were parsing every word. You know, you asked him, did Bill try to stop you? Great question.
And I imagine he chased them around the parking lot with his vehicle.
With his churro. You must not leave.
You know, it's funny. This is a little journalism insider baseball, right? But I knew I only had 15 minutes, so I wrote my five questions down. And then I was debating, should I run this as a transcript or not? And at first I was like, nah, I'm not going to, too boring. But then I thought, you know what? There are a lot of nuances in the transcript, stutters, where he kind of tries to figure out what to say. So I'm like, I got to run this as a transcript.
It was great. I wish we had a recording because, it was you know what, Mary Jo? Pulitzer, Scopelet. Big deal. I mean, I'm telling you, this was great. And you asked, they I don't know why they picked you. You obviously one of the premier Microsoft watchers, but usually they go with somebody who's going to be a softball. You're either going to go with a David Pogue or something. I don't know. Somebody's just going to ease them in over the plate.
Sure.
So credit to them for giving you the scoop. I'm thrilled. And boy, you did a great job.
Thanks. I'm not a Ballmer hater. I think that may be part of why they gave him to me, because I actually always was a fan, even though they wouldn't let him talk to me. I was still a fan. I thought he did a really good job all in all as CEO. Yeah, he made mistakes, but I'm not a hater. And I'm still not a hater.
One of the things that's come out since he announced his retirement, or whatever you call it, is how much people like Steve Ballmer. You know, there is a broad range of opinions on whether he was a good CEO.
Right.
But there's nobody who says, oh, he was a dick. Everybody likes Steve Ballmer. He was the kind of guy you'd want to have a beer with. Right?
Yeah.
Right?
Well,
that's probably true. Yeah, we've heard, Paul and I have heard a lot of stories, I think, from people who work directly for him, that he can be a tough guy to work for.
Well, you could see him yelling at you. I mean, you know, there are a few incidents on stage at some of those sales events, you know, taking the iPhone and fake stomping it, things like that, where you go, yeah, I wouldn't want to get him mad.
I thought
that was funny.
But it was funny. And
I did, too.
I think he should have
real stomped it.
Well, I do, too. he could take a couple of bucks out of the billions and give him a new phone.
But I got to tell you, doing that interview, you could feel he was sad. And,
This is what I want. I want the stuff we can't read between the lines. So yeah, give us that.
Yeah. I could tell it wasn't a happy day, obviously. He really did put his whole life into the company, like he said during the interview, you know, and I think when I asked him, what are you doing next? And he's like, I actually don't know. That's kind of a sign like, yeah, this wasn't something I had planned to announce today, people, you know.
Was it germane? I mean, in the past, Bill has stepped up, chairman of the board, Bill Gates, founder, has stepped up and said, no, Ballmer's staying. Was it, do you think, relevant that he said, you know, this is a decision I had to make. Bill had nothing to say about it. Is that, me reading between the lines, sounds to me like perhaps the board decided it might be time for him to go and that Bill did not fight for him this time?
Yeah, I would say that's
Is that accurate?
Fair. Yeah. I mean, we don't know for sure, right? But I think if he had had a choice, I don't think he would have left last Friday or announced he was leaving, I should say.
Yep.
Very interesting. Yeah.
One of the things we touched on last Friday was this notion that, you know, everyone has opinions about what Microsoft should do, what he could have done differently, you know, all of that kind of stuff. But the one thing none of us really understand is what it's like to run a company of that size and complexity, and the strange interactions that you have both with the world and with that board of directors that really is kind of overseeing things. And so in some ways, you're the most powerful person in the world, or one of them. And, you know, he could say something stupid at a public event and send Microsoft stock falling through the floor. But he's also accountable to the board. And so theoretically, at least at any time, and I think this eventually did happen, they could say, hey, we had a good run. It's time for you to go. You get to call how you leave, but you're leaving, you know, and it's such a strange, tenuous thing. And it's an experience that I don't think any of us have any parallel to.
Yeah. This is a small board. I mean, take off Bill and Steve, you have a total of 7 people. Also, not people that you probably ever heard of. The president of Harvey Mudd College, the former CFO at J.P. Morgan, the former vice chairman at Bank of America, the former chairman of the board
at BMW. This is like rich white guys club.
Well, they put one black guy in, John Thompson, of a company I never heard of.
I know, but...
CEO of Virtual Instruments, and they put...
John Thompson used to work at IBM in the day. Yep. Yeah, he's actually the lead independent guy on the board.
That's right.
So
that's true.
His name sounds familiar, yeah.
Yeah. Then Symantec after that, I believe, right? Not McAfee. Okay. I always think, Symantec or McAfee?
Yeah. But I'm looking at this, and it isn't a group that you would say had a particularly strong... You know, backbone, the kind of group that would get...
Right. Almost by design.
It pretty much was, you'd guess, looking at this, Bill and Steve with maybe a little John Thompson thrown in.
Yeah. I mean,
am
this
I
is
wrong?
Like when Steve Jobs came back to Apple and he recast that board from scratch.
Yeah.
You know, that was like the scene from Scarface. and I'm sure that this is similar, you know, without the upheaval that occurred to make it happen.
So, I mean, there's nothing, these are solid business people, and certainly, but they're not, for the most part, technologists, a lot of money people. There's only two technologists, the chairman and president and CEO of Seagate and John Thompson.
This thing, it might as well be like Ronald McDonald, Colonel Sanders, you know, one of the aliens from Area 51.
It's like the guy who used to play Mr. Hooper on Sesame Street.
This is more like the board of an established company that's kind of in its what would you call it? Not its growth phase, but kind of its maintenance phase.
Yeah,
its
maintenance phase. Yeah, exactly. Can I say that's what Microsoft has been until maybe now?
I think there's a lot of red leather seats and.
Oh, it's probably a gorgeous boardroom, I'm guessing.
I mean, and we shouldn't forget who was on the board until fairly recently was Reed Hastings from Netflix.
Right. Not there anymore. He was calling for Ballmer's departure for years.
Was he?
Wasn't he? I think it was Reed Hastings who was one of the. I might be wrong.
I'm not sure. I'm not sure at all about that. I'm not sure you're right or wrong. When he decided to get off the board, I think it was like maybe a year or so ago. I'm not remembering the exact date. Everybody was speculating, was it because he was in consideration for becoming the next CEO? So I don't know.
So let's talk about. Yeah, here's from Kara Swisher writing in All Things D. Gates had rejected such suggestions that Ballmer would leave for years. That included former director and Netflix CEO Reed Hastings, who had been one of the first to urge the company to replace Ballmer as CEO, as well as from a spate of Wall Street investors complaining about, of course, the stock price. And, you know, it's interesting when you read the articles. I think it was somebody, maybe Peter Kafka at All Things D, who pointed out that the stock valuation of Microsoft went under Mr. Ballmer went from $600 million to $270 million, billion, I should say. Huge drop. But then if you look at revenue and profits, nothing but an increase over the past.
Tripled.
Yeah. And nobody pointed that out. It was all about the stock price, which seems to me the worst indicator for how a company's doing.
Yeah.
It only matters to Wall Street.
All right.
Well, let's talk successor. What does this mean for the company? I know you've done all this. You did it all. A beautiful job, by the way. And people can go back and watch our Twit specials. And we did a special. It was great right after this happened, and we got both of you on.
I see nothing but questions going forward, you know, and that's the problem. It's not like someone out in the chat room today or on Twitter is going to shout out, here's the answer, I have it, and everyone's going to say, hey, yeah, actually, that makes a lot of sense. And that's the problem for Microsoft. It's such a ginormous company with so many different businesses. I can't think of a single person qualified to do what he did. And for all the complaining about how awful he was and how he ran them into the ground or whatever he supposedly did, I don't see how anyone else could have done a better job than he did.
Certainly,
and so this is a real problem.
Certainly nobody knew Microsoft better than Steve. He was there from the very beginning. He was Bill Gates' roommate, for crying out loud.
And he really did know the company inside and out. Yeah.
You think it will be somebody inside?
I would think they may go outside. That would be my guess if I had to guess inside or outside. But I don't know who on the outside. Mm-hmm. I think if they stick to going on the inside, my top three picks who I think are most likely are Tony Bates, who came to Microsoft through Skype, through the acquisition of Skype.
Oh, that's interesting.
Or Satya Nadella, who runs cloud and enterprise for Microsoft. Or Terry Myerson, kind of the outside candidate, who's running the operating system division now and who currently has been running Windows Phone.
Oh, my God. Paul, are you okay?
I'm okay.
I think that last suggestion made him...
But, you know, the timing of this is very interesting because they literally just did the reorg. And named some of these people to new positions. The reorg kind of cemented this new function, or kind of like Apple along functional lines. Apple just did the same thing. Kind of cemented the service devices and services notion, and that's one of the things Mr. Ballmer said to you, Mary Jo, when he was talking to you. Is this is about the transition to a devices and services company. He says, I'm not going to be here long enough to oversee that. So we need somebody younger. Is that credible? That seemed reasonable.
Yeah. I mean, I think you could make a case for that being part of the thinking that, you know, they just did this reorg and now they want somebody who's going to see it through. And right. if he had stuck to his original timetable, Ballmer would have left around 2017 or 2018.
Yeah, he's my age. He's 57. So he's not retirement age by any means.
Right. Right.
There's
actually, Leo, we've been meaning to talk about that.
There's a little oomph left in him, I hope. Well, you know, maybe it is.
There's no tiger in your tank, Leo.
You know, but the question people keep raising, and it's a real question, is, okay, so they just announced this reorg. Now Ballmer leaves. So whoever comes in inherits this reorg or decides they completely hate it and do it over.
That would be really bad. That would be like the one thing Steve Ballmer said, and I think this was widely misinterpreted in the general press, his biggest, greatest regret, you asked him, which I thought was wonderful. And he said it was the loop-de-loo that he did, that Microsoft did from Longhorn to Vista. And people, I saw headlines even on places like The Verge saying, Vista is his greatest regret. No, it was really Longhorn, right? And the flop of Longhorn. I don't know why I brought that up. But...
Well, the
loop-de-loop. I guess I was thinking loop-de-loop, right? You don't want to go through another loop-de-loop. This would be the worst time to change what they just did.
Well, okay, unless that strategy makes no sense for this company, right? I mean, in other words, rather than – I don't have an opinion on that. I'm not trying to say that devices and services is wrong and they need to redo it. But I really do think, like Mary Jo, that, you know, maybe this person comes from outside the company and maybe that's what it takes for someone to have an objective – assessment of the company, like maybe Reed Hastings had and then was bounced off the board perhaps, and says, you know, this strategy doesn't make any sense, or this part of the business doesn't make any sense, or whatever, and whatever happens happens. I mean, I think that whatever does happen, however it happens, I just hope that there is an honest and objective and transparent telling of what's happening there, and then they do the right thing, even if that means going back on this recent strategy.
Yeah, my takeaway from it was whoever we pick as CEO has got to be on board with this reorg we just did, or they shouldn't come. That was kind of how I felt it.
Dangerous stance.
Yeah.
Well, you're not going to get the people who are naysayers. You may not get the Reed Hastings of the world, the people who say, no, there's a better way. Is this an opportunity? Somebody asked in the chat room. Is this an opportunity to split the company now? Would that be of interest? Is that something that should happen now?
Should we talk about this now or later?
I don't care. I don't care when we do it.
I'm sorry I rearranged your
schedule. No, okay.
But you know what? This is the story. this is the tech story, not of the week, not of the month, of the year.
Okay. No,
that's true. That's true. Yep.
So I'll tell you what the official answer is on that. I asked them about, you know, why don't you guys just become IBM? Because you're you're very strong in the enterprise, right? Like if you look at where Microsoft's 16 separate $1 billion businesses are at this company right now, almost every single one of them is an enterprise business. And they said, both Ballmer and John Thompson, who was on the call too from the board, said, our strategy is that we believe you cannot be successful in the enterprise without being a player in consumer. And that's why we're not going to give up on devices. And that's why we're not going to give up on being a player in the consumer market with Xbox. We believe you have to have both to be successful going forward. We can't just be, you know, an Apple or a Google. We have to be everything. And that's what they really believe.
After, you know, you got to say that the straw that broke the camel's back was the $900 million write-off on Surface RT. So to say we're all in on devices is, gosh.
They had a bigger write-off of Aquantiv.
Yeah, no, that's true.
Right? Didn't they?
It was a billion.
Yeah. That was, what, 5 or 6 billion?
Oh, yeah, that's right. It was several billion. Yeah.
Much bigger. Yeah. This company writes off billions of dollars all the time, Leo. This is just...
That's nothing.
A part of their...
$800 million, you know, nothing.
They wrote off $1 billion. They didn't write it off.
I didn't say it was the fatal blow. It was just the straw that broke. It was like, oh, come on.
Yeah.
One more, you know, piece of bad news. Finally...
Although they're not, you know, they're not giving up on Windows RT, despite this write-off, and they're not giving up on the Surface. They're going forward with both.
No, that's clear. They were all in. Yeah. Yep. You got to think Bill Gates pulled the trigger on this. Please, just tell me that's obviously the case, right?
Well, he's chairman of the board, right? And he's the largest shareholder by far. of any shareholder of Microsoft.
I could just see him putting his arm around Steve, saying, "We had a good run, Steve. You were a great CEO. I really appreciate it, but we're facing a new era, a new time. We want to get somebody in here who can take us into this new services era, this devices era." And the Wall Street hates you.
Okay, but Bill Gates also maybe needs to have a conversation like that with Microsoft, where he says, "Yeah, you know, we've had a good run. Maybe I shouldn't be the chairman of the board. Maybe I shouldn't be the person with most of the stock. And, you know, maybe something different needs to happen here." And this goes back to that honest assessment thing. I really feel that, like, as long as Bill Gates is basically running the show behind the scenes, like some kind of a star chamber thing, that no real change can happen at Microsoft, because it's all about protecting the legacy right now. And I often think that, you know, I by the way, I think there's some truth to the notion that Steve Ballmer said to Mary Jo, and that Frank Shaw said separately in a blog post this week on the official Microsoft blog, that those kind of integration pieces make a lot of sense, that it's not this or that, it's this and that. And in this case, we're talking consumer and business, that these things kind of feed into each other. We don't just have consumer-oriented email, we have email. And so we have email for consumers, and we have email for businesses. And it's like, yeah, okay, you know, I actually think that that is a kind of a valid argument. But on the flip side, companies like Google and Apple are actually extremely successful. In Apple's case, even more successful than Microsoft, just doing one or the other. And more to the point, with just looking at Microsoft specifically, because we don't really have to compare them to other companies, this business is so damn complex. I just don't understand how it all fits together, how they can justify having so many employees. Why my phone is talking to me? I don't know.
Hello, Paul Theron.
I don't know.
You are a winner.
That is bizarre. Why would that phone have picked up? My house is haunted, Leo. I don't know what's going on.
It's this ghost of Steve Ballmer.
Hi, Paul.
Yeah.
Oh, these years I forged the chains. So,
hi, Paul, this is Microsoft. Please stop talking.
You, Mary Jo, asked a little bit about the succession. You did, actually, your whole second article is about succession. And it's interesting that Thompson was in there, by the way, as part of the conversation. Why was that, do you think?
Because he's heading up the committee
succession
to find
planning.
The new CEO.
Got it. So, Bloomberg's money is on Stephen Elop, CEO of former Microsoft. He's CEO of Nokia. What do you think of that? I'd put Elop in charge of a devices branch, perhaps.
I kind of feel as though if Microsoft goes outside for the next CEO, they're not going to go for anybody who's ever worked at Microsoft.
That's inside outside, yeah.
Like a lot of people are asking about Sanofsky, ran Windows.
God.
I don't think he'll be coming back.
That's as bad as saying Scott Forstall, which some have said also.
Which some have said, yeah. Right. People have asked about Jay Allard coming back.
That that's only because he was this great creative guy. But that's a misunderstanding of what a CEO does.
It is. It's a total misunderstanding of what makes for
He also made Zune, by the way.
And Courier. Remember, that was why he left, is because Courier was not made.
Supposedly. He denied that was why he left. But yeah, everyone thinks that was.
No, they all deny everything, don't they?
Right. So I don't think Elop would be the one they would look to. I really don't. Even though he's now running Nokia, and you could make an argument that because he now is running a mobile company, that it would make sense. I think if they go outside, they're going to look for somebody who's a fresh face, new blood. Some people think they're going to go for someone young, like Valley consumer experience type person. Yeah. Some think they're going to go more established, like a services person, like maybe a telco person, because they really understand how to keep cloud services up,
you know,
and how to, you know, make them more reliable.
You know, kick some butt. He's actually planning his own retirement at Ford, but it's Alan Mulally.
Yeah,
people have mentioned him.
That's that's the comparison I've made. Although, actually, to be honest, you know what Stephen Elop did at Nokia is exactly what the next guy needs to do at Microsoft: walk in, assess the situation.
Right.
You know, describe how it's crashing into the ground, and then fix it.
And Alan Mulally did.
Right. But so what had to happen for that to happen, which was, I think it was William Ford, to admit that he couldn't do the job, was going to drive the company into the ground, and needed some outsider who, by the way, was from outside that industry.
Yep.
That bold step needs to happen first. And that's what the board at Microsoft needs to do. And that's what I'm a little nervous they're not going to do.
Hmm.
Yeah, because boldness is what is required at this point, is it not?
Yeah, the one trick, well, one of the tricks in all this, of course, is Microsoft's history shows people who come in from the outside to join Microsoft in management positions never succeed. You can look back on their history of all the outsiders who've come in. The only one who's still there who's very notable is Kevin Turner, who came from Walmart, who's the COO. And he's succeeded at Microsoft because he was very much a Ballmer pick, and Ballmer made him stick around, made sure he was successful. Other people who've come in the past have not stuck around. Ray Ozzie is a great example of that. He lasted 5 years about and then was out.
And accomplished really nothing.
Well, by the way,
Azure was an accomplishment.
It's possible that Mary Jo isn't a huge Ray Ozzie fan. I certainly feel like he accomplished nothing while he was there. But in retrospect, in that full-blown Monday morning quarterback kind of mode, I mean, do you wonder if his message that we need to look beyond Windows was something that Microsoft simply wasn't receptive to at the time? His inability to change Microsoft was because that culture was still too firmly in place, and that he might today have a better chance.
Yep. When he left, the rumor was a big part of the reason he left was because of Steven Sinofsky and because of Microsoft deciding to protect Windows, and that was the thing that had to be protected at all costs. So, I mean, it could have gone differently. People who worked for and with him on Windows Azure and on what was the successor to, the precedent to SkyDrive, Live Mesh, they all really liked him. He got really rave reviews inside. So when he left, a lot of people were like, we thought he was in for the long haul, but no.
Right.
It's a conundrum, a challenge, frankly. Maybe one of the biggest challenges since Yahoo. And you need a Marissa Meyer type. You need somebody young, bold, with new vision who can kick
By the way, had Steve Ballmer succeeded in purchasing Yahoo for, $45 billion?
Yeah.
I believe it's worth about $45 today. that probably would have been his undoing. Steve Ballmer would have been gone long before today.
Yeah,
that
would have been the end of it.
Yeah.
And through some happy circumstance, that didn't happen. That would have been the biggest disaster that he's ever done.
Interesting.
Agree.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Well, I'm sorry to retrench and everything, and you have
asking good questions because we're touching on some things we hadn't, now that a week's gone
the
by,
smoke's like cleared a little bit.
Yeah. And you have more hindsight. Like we were just doing a quick special, like right after we heard the news last week.
Well, you did a great job, and you had happened to just come off an interview with the guy.
Right. So that was very lucky. Yeah. The other thing that hasn't been played up in a lot of interviews that I want to make sure people know is this, Microsoft's board's been thinking about and looking for a successor and having to create a successor plan for years, right? I mean, when you have a company like, the size of Microsoft, you can't just say, well, we'll figure out who the successor to the CEO is when he gets hit by a bus, right? It doesn't work like that.
No, Thompson and Steve's told you they've been working for 10 years, for a decade.
Yeah, they said 10 years they've been thinking about it. And the last 3 to 4, they've been kind of on the sly, talking to people, thinking about would this person make a good CEO? Mm-hmm. So they've been doing a lot of due diligence. That's why I think we're probably going to see Steve Ballmer leave sooner rather than later. And I think the new person's going to be appointed sooner rather than later. They don't want to have a lame duck CEO hanging around for too long.
Interesting.
So I think soon.
There's also a crazy holding pattern that must be occurring in much of Microsoft. I've heard this is true on the Windows team, certainly, that they've just announced a reorg, and now this guy's leaving. I mean, who exactly are we reporting to? And is this strategy that we as this one team are on, is this still going to be the case in 2, 3, 6 months, whatever? I mean, how do you move forward when there's so much uncertainty?
It's a terrible thing to have to face at this point.
Yeah, let alone the individual issues, right? I mean, let's face it, a lot of these guys are superfluous. And I would hope that a new CEO would come in and say, one of the things we can do, just a thought, is maybe get rid of some of the deadwood.
Yeah.
Yeah, a lot of people are worried about layoffs, because even when Microsoft announced this latest reorg, there were no layoffs, or if there were, there were very few. And the part of the company that has not been reorged yet is the sales part of the company, like the partner organization called SMSMP, the part that does direct sales, none of that has been reorged yet. And those people are kind of worried, like, oh boy, with the new CEO coming in and all this uncertainty, what about us? And that's a good thing to worry about, I think.
Yeah.
Is there any possibility that they would take this as an opportunity to split the company?
I hope that that's on the table. Not because I think that that's what should happen, but I do think it's something that we need to I have anything to do with it, that they need to seriously consider, because I have to wonder how much more successful some parts of this company could be if they weren't bound by these really bizarre, strict rules that all center around Windows. You know, Office being the obvious example, that if Office was something that could, say, run in full-blown form on an iPad or an Android device, that they would see increased revenues.
But I think that could happen without them splitting the company, actually.
Well, that's just one example, but yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah. Because sure. I think they, at least the board right now, has absolutely no intention of splitting this company. I think that
interesting.
They,
yeah, okay.
Yeah, they because Although you know that I, whole
you message, could make a case for that though, right? Could
I know,
you even you could, for
that? I think
for shareholders, what would be better than splitting?
Oh, absolutely.
You make a great
what would be better? You get two or three stocks, probably three, right?
Shareholders should be demanding that they at least leave. You know,
you get a hardware division. Yeah. You get a which might that could include Xbox as well as Surface.
Yeah.
Or you call it a consumer division, maybe. You get a services division.
Right.
And then you get Windows and Office. You get this, you know.
The question, if you're at Microsoft and you just did this reorg, is what would splitting it look like now? Because you've got one operating system division doing the phone, the Xbox OS.
Yeah, now Windows. With a functional reorg, you've screwed it up.
How do you do that now, right? Before, you could have said devices and services. But now it's like, wait, we have some consumer services. Do those go with devices or do those go with services? You know, and then it gets a little more complicated, I think, because of the reorg.
Yeah. I mean, we don't need to step through it exactly. I mean, it's not hard to imagine some things. Xbox as its own company. It's not hard to imagine maybe Windows Phone going to Nokia or something, or that becomes some merged company. Or, you know, some of it's not too hard to imagine. I mean, obviously, because Microsoft is so big and so complex, there are those weird kind of issues.
Well, that's the argument, is that you have these internecine battles.
But you know what? This stuff has happened before. Car makers are bought and sold, and you'll see something like, Chrysler is now owned by Fiat, but they have a platform that was built by Mercedes is still underlying some of their car. I mean, these things happen. I mean, it's not insurmountable, but it's also not the only answer. I don't mean to suggest that we need to see Microsoft split up and that's the only recourse. But I really feel strongly that if that's not a serious part of the discussion, then they're not taking it seriously. Yeah. And they're not willing to look ahead. So we'll see.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, everybody should absolutely read Mary Jo's two articles, her interview with Steve Ballmer and John Thompson. And I think this is a subject of infinite fascination.
Oh, yeah. We'll be talking about this probably every episode for the rest of the year.
It's also like one of those chess puzzles. You know, you look at it and it says mate in two and you have to figure out, well, what's the next move? And what is the next move? And I think it's a fascinating strategic question. You don't have to want to change your blog name? All about Microsofts?
All about the baby bells.
I don't have to do that.
Sure. No, that's fair. I mean, right. Okay. Well, it's not good. We don't want to go too far down that rabbit hole. But
Dvorak, and we'll talk endlessly about this plan to split up Microsoft. He just loves. But for him, I think it's an intellectual exercise. Like, what would you do? What would the benefit? And there's certainly a stock benefit. You get three, for every share of Microsoft stock you own, you get three new companies, three new shares.
Or seven.
Or seven.
Or 100, it's a big company, Leo.
Yeah.
There's a lot of cake.
Two or three. Let's talk about Windows 8.1, the RTM. When's that coming? Soon, right? Like, end of August is now. I'm just looking. August 29th. You got 2 days.
Yeah.
Well, the actual RTM happened already.
Oh, it did?
Yeah. It was kind of anticlimactic, though. It had happened last Friday. That's the date that they were kind of off internally.
We were busy doing other stuff.
Yeah, they were a little busy last Friday.
They snuck it out. Hey, nobody's looking. Quick.
Right. They actually announced it, though, on Tuesday of this week. And they said that this is the day that we're starting to hand off the RTM bits to our OEMs.
Okay.
So, of course, the next question is, well, when does everybody else get them? When does MSDN and TechNet and the volume licensees get them? And the answer, which we had heard rumors of, October 18th. Okay. That's launch day.
That's everybody gets it at the same time.
Which is unprecedented. Yeah. It never happens like that.
Yeah.
It's usually the developers who need the code to finish off their apps get it probably like a week or two after RTM.
Right.
But not this time.
Wow.
So I'm going to let Paul rant now. Do we have a little segment for rant?
I don't have a problem with the schedule. What do you mean? No, I mean, it's fairly unprecedented for Microsoft not to give an OS release to developers before the release. The one semi-exception being Windows Phone 8, where, in fact, they did give it to key developers, but withheld the final version to most developers until the general release. That said, Windows is used by about 1,000 or 10,000 times as many people as Windows Phone, so it's not really the same thing. Basically, what's happening is when you make yourself an arbitrary deadline, one of the ways that you can hit it is to pretend that you finished something but then keep working on it, and that's really what's happening here. And so,
RTM isn't, it's as you said, not... Doesn't really mean RTM.
Even when it was RTM'd, they knew of a bug that would need to be fixed post-RTM and would be delivered to PC makers and through Windows Update to end users by the time of GA, you know, general availability in October. And basically what they're doing is handing this off to PC makers so they can get it applied to systems, but then they're going to retroactively update it between now and then. And so... The notion of, you know, RTMing a product and then delivering fixes is not new. Everyone does this. Microsoft did this last year with Windows 8. Everyone who uses an iPhone knows that as soon as an iPhone comes out, there'll be a software update within weeks. And, you know, this happens. I mean, so, whatever. But Windows is kind of a special case in many ways because there is a long-term established schedule that they've basically followed along the lines. And someone wrote something like, you know... The sort of expectation that you're just going to get this thing is sort of wrong. And I that would be true if there wasn't a precedent established over decades about how they did these things. And that's the problem I have with that. I think that developers should have the final code to test their software against. Yeah, I think that IT Pro should have the final code to test it within their environments, even though not one of them intends to actually roll it out anywhere. I mean, I think that those things need to happen. And I just find it kind of inexcusable for there to be no answers, no comments, no nothing from them about that. They just kind of gloss over it like, we're doing this new rapid release thing. And part of that rapid release thing means that we're not going to actually release this thing rapidly. We're going to hold on to it for 2 months arbitrarily. And that is just bizarre to me.
Yeah. The downside to this, another downside to this is everybody's downloading the leaked bits now. All the developers are out there downloading the leaks because they know they're not going to get the final for ages. that puts you in a tough spot if you're a developer.
Yep.
Although, you know, one thing that's worth mentioning, and Dr. Pizza is the one who told me this, and I verified it's true. It's not that nobody is getting the RTM bits early. There are a handful of software vendors who are getting the RTM bits early. There are people who Microsoft wants to use as their showcase partners at the launch. So we don't know who they are, but we can guess on some of them. And they actually are going to get the RTM bits before everybody else.
Well, then I will give the Windows team credit for one thing. They sure do know how to tell people where they stand. I mean, my God.
That happened with Windows Phone, though. Remember, Windows Phone 8.
Yep.
Some select people got the early bits. And that Microsoft would not give everybody, all the other developers, the SDK. They said the reason they wouldn't was because it would show some features that they weren't ready to announce. And by the time of the announcement, we saw the SDK, we saw what they announced, and there was nothing that hadn't leaked already. So I don't know. I don't think the secrecy thing is the reason this time around. I don't feel like it is. but maybe it is. I don't know.
Secrecy is meaningless at this point.
You know, Apple is the most secretive company on earth, but the truth is they released six or seven betas of iOS 7
so far,
to developers.
Yeah.
The most secretive company on earth is willing to put its code out there and allow people to dig away at it and allow rumors to pop up because they do it. Because you know what? Actually, that gets people excited.
Yeah.
And, you know, allowing rumors to go about supposed new features that no one knows about and then releasing exactly what everyone already knew is the opposite.
Yeah.
Right.
You know, and they
but
just
But that's
don't
not what they're stuff. Doing this time, right? They're not doing that this time.
Conceivably, right? It's possible that that's what people, you know, what if this thing's being held back because there's like Surface stuff hidden in there? And, you know, what if it's being held back because they're going to, you know, I know, it's crazy.
I know.
So maybe it is the same.
Yeah, the advice Microsoft's giving developers, if you want to get your apps ready for the launch, is to use the consumer preview of Windows 8.1, which came out in late June, and also to use the preview of Visual Studio 2013, which also came out at the end of June. The thing that's missing, everybody keeps pointing out, is they did not RTM Visual Studio yet, Visual Studio 2013. So some people are speculating maybe the reason they're holding back the bits is because you really need the RTM of Visual Studio 2013 to do anything real for Windows 8.1.
I'm looking at Alan over here and wondering if he has anything to say about that.
Let's look at his face and see.
He's smiling, that's all. He's just smiling and going...
Can he help us here? Give us a little insider info?
I am not the journalist you are, Mary Jo. I can't put the screws to him.
Where's VS 2013, Alan?
We should mention that.
But you could sit on him at least, right?
No, he's a big guy. I think he could push me right off. We should mention that we have a live studio audience almost always for this show. People love this show. And one of them works at Microsoft in the Visual Studio division, so...
What's he doing up in your studio?
Shouldn't you be at work, dude? What's his vacation?
It's a problem with Microsoft. They're like France. They're off for the...
It's August, my friend. There is nothing to do. We are all going to the country. I once was in Paris in August, and I went to Bertillon, which is the most famous ice cream shop in the world.
Yep.
They were closed for the month of August.
Sure.
No, you have to eat it in December.
Paris in August is great because all you can hear is English spoken by Americans.
It's a bunch of guys in shorts best. Going, I heard this was a great city.
Yeah, with a giant camera on their belly around.
Yeah, exactly. Where'd everybody go?
Doesn't anyone here speak English? Yeah, everyone does, apparently.
Yeah. That's why we go to Paris in December and the ice cream is cold. Anyway, we won't pester our fine visitor.
No.
But
I'm not done pestering.
Your ear, anything, any signal you could give me.
Yeah.
Right.
he's very good natured. Let's put it that way.
That's good. Yeah. We'll get him later.
I will. I'll pull him aside afterward. He can whisper in my ear.
Good.
Yeah. And you know me. I keep a secret.
He does sit in front of a microphone all day.
Oh boy, can I keep a secret?
I don't, but I got to say, even if and when Visual Studio 2013 RTMs, I still don't think they're going to give the bits earlier than October 18th to MSDN. I don't think they are, and they also have said the store will not open for app submission of these new apps that are using the features of Windows 8.1 until October 18th. So even if you
which
do,
which is awesome because.
I know.
It's not like we need apps.
all your existing apps will work, so the store won't be bare.
All of
like,
my
there
existing
will be
apps?
Yeah.
But there aren't that many of them.
All existing apps work. How many are there? 110,000 or something like that?
Yeah. It may be. I mean, maybe really the RTM isn't really, as Paul submits, an RTM, and they don't want people developing to it.
Yeah.
Right.
Maybe. Well, I'd be shocked if APIs changed.
They're not going to change that much. No.
Well, they've changed, guide. Right? I mean, there's a list. There are lists of the APIs that have changed. Are they going to change from RC? Yeah. How much are they going to change from, the customer preview to RTM is the question, right?
So Walking Cat on Twitter noted today that the RTM version of Windows 8 ships with non-RTM versions of the .NET and I guess it's Visual C12.
So they're still working on that.
That's Visual Studio 2012. Yeah.
Okay. Runtimes.
Alan's looking askance at that. He says, I don't think that's the case.
It's not .NET 4.5.1, I don't think, that's in there, is it? I don't think so. Because that's... what something that's inside of, well, it shipped with Visual Studio 2013. Or is going to
ship. So maybe that's, you know,
but I'm not sure, I'm not totally sure that's true either, because it also may be shipping alongside the OS and not just in Visual Studio.
I'm intentionally not looking at him. Well, what do you think? Go ahead. What? He says it is shipping as part of Windows 8.1. It's actually one of my. Yeah. That's his thing. It's his group. So one of his groups. So in other words, October 18th, Alan, is what you're saying? He says he can't commit to that.
Okay.
Could you commit to November 1st?
It is part of Windows 8.1. So yes, there you go. And I guess, so. But Microsoft's saying Windows October 18th, aren't they? I mean, that's official,
right.
Isn't
October
it?
18th, you get the RTM bits. That's known, and that is established, right? But people who need them, who believe they need them earlier, like developers, are the ones who are especially unhappy. And some volume licensees are not that keen either.
Sure.
Although
IT,
there are
IT
not
people
that many.
Work, you know, they want to test it. And, you know, there are not many people using 8.1 or 8. That's the
right. But, and, you know, if you're a business user who tend to be the volume licensees, you're not going to, your users probably are not getting Windows 8.1 through the store. You're going to get it in a different way.
Right. Oh, we want it right away.
Right. No, you're going to get it through.
There's no hurry on that.
The enterprise SKU doesn't go through the store.
Yeah, there's probably less of a hurry. Developers, I could see why they would be concerned. But on the other hand, if they're using APIs, those are probably not going to change, right? Nobody's saying anything.
It's really quiet in here.
I mean,
why would they?
Why would they change the API? And so presumably if your app works now, it's going to continue to work. Is that safe to say? Sure it is. Yes.
That's what they're saying.
So,
I mean, if they're
what are you worried about?
You know, I don't know. I see Lance McCarthy, who we know is a really good Windows Phone developer, says he knows of an app that doesn't work.
Testing schmesting. Just put it out there. You'll hear if it doesn't work.
Yeah. He said Asphalt 7 Heat doesn't work on 8.1.
Asphalt 7 Heat.
Well, you know why.
Wait, I'm sorry. Is this app actually available?
Is that a game?
It's a game, yeah.
It's a racing game.
It's a great racing game.
Wait, hold on. But is that available on Windows 8?
And one could reasonably presume that something like that has a lot of custom code, may in fact be using deprecated or unofficial or hidden APIs to get the maximum performance. There's all sorts of reasons. Something, they're saying it's out, Paul. It just came out.
It is. I didn't realize it was.
Out. Yeah.
Okay.
So it could very easily be that. I mean, game developers are notorious for, you know, squeezing every bit of performance out of there.
Yeah.
So.
Okay, another one. Will Dryling says the MLB TV app also does not work on Windows RT 8.1 preview. This is why some developers are asking for the RTM bits, because they say if it doesn't work on the preview, we need to check. Is it going to work on the RTM, or what do we have to tweak to get it to work on
RTM? Right. All it did was take us 2 minutes to understand why people might need the RTM version of this product. It's weird how Microsoft never...
And two fairly important programs, had a discussion I might add. This is not, you know...
Yep. Yeah, it's
although I have to point out that iOS 7, the 7th beta, all 7 betas, the Audible app has not worked.
Oh, really? Oh,
wow. It still does not work.
Wow.
So, I mean, these things happen.
Happen. Yep.
But that is why you want to get developers final.
Why you always want the latest version, so you can make sure it works. And if it doesn't, figure out why.
Yeah.
You want ideal, the perfect world that never happens is on launch day, everything's in the store, everything works. You can get new apps that showcase why you should get the OS. If there's a short lag between launch day and when this happens, that's okay. But if it's a long lag and it's going to take people, you know, days and days to get their apps to work, then that's a little less okay, right?
Right. Well, and as we know, and developers very clearly know, when a new version comes out, if you can be out day and date, you're much more likely, if you could say ready for Windows 8.1 to get those downloads, than if a week later you come out and you say, oh, ready for Windows 8.1 now.
Yeah.
Just doesn't have the same... Oomph. Yeah, although it's not like it's a brand new operating system. I mean, it's an upgrade.
Right.
Okay. But it's also something that, because it is an upgrade, could be delivered like a service pack or whatever, and is something you will download from the web and install fairly quickly. And, you know, there's an implicit promise. Actually, it's a pretty explicit promise in Windows 8.1 that they're going to fix all these problems and make things better. And a lot of people who took that bite and adopted Windows 8 and RT, especially early on.
They deserve better.
Want it. They want it now.
Better. Yeah.
So Microsoft is very proud that they were able to deliver this thing within a year and all that kind of thing. But I think the truth is that it took them 4 years to get Windows 8 right, and that is the real development time for what is a fairly major platform shift, and that's completely understandable. But it's tough to see announcements like this and have it not happen the way that it has always happened and not happen the way that people expect it to happen.
Here is what your nemesis, Ed Bott, says.
My nemesis?
Isn't he?
No.
I thought he was like your Lex Luthor.
Wow. No, that would have to go. No. Ed is...
No. I'm just teasing you.
If Ed was in the Justice League with me, he would be the Flash to my Batman.
There you go. Here's what the Flash says. Why is Microsoft keeping the final release of Windows 8.1 secret? He has a couple of reasons... or his guesses, by the way. Getting the upgrade experience right is crucial. In other words, they're not done with what it will look like. And I admit, this is an ambitious upgrade, right? Because you're doing it through the store. They want to make it a very good consumer experience, right? Windows 8.1 is more than just client code. Releasing the MSDN and TechNet is the same as releasing the public. You addressed that. Corporate customers and developers will be watching closely. Yeah, but that's the point, is they're watching. They're waiting. Watching and waiting. I don't know. He says, by the way, and I think this is what the chat room's been echoing, this is where you miss Steven Sinofsky, because when Sinofsky was there, they shipped. You know, they didn't miss these deadlines.
Well, when Sinofsky was there...
We don't have to miss Steven Sinofsky.
When Sinofsky was there, you would have got the 10,000-word blog post about why they were doing this.
Yeah.
They still wouldn't have shipped. But you know what? He wouldn't have said, we're not shipping it today. It would have been... Windows 8.1 has been released to manufacturing. 2,500-word blog post and 1,785 words into it was a hint that, oh, wait, it's not coming out today.
The main thing that Ed says agrees completely with you, which is what is most disappointing about this whole scenario is both the lack of substantive comment from Microsoft's management and the perception that they didn't see this negative reaction coming. If you're going to change the rules so radically, you really owe it to your stakeholders, particularly users, developers, and IT departments, mm-hmm. to communicate with them. That's exactly mm-hmm. what we're. That's what you're saying.
I mean, it was early August that I wrote a post saying there's a very strong rumor out there that you developers are not going to get the bits to launch. And I can't tell you how many emails I got saying you're wrong. You don't know what you're talking about. No way. They can't do this. And then boom, there it is. Right. So. I don't know rumors were the heads up, but sure.
I don't remember when this happened, but I want to say probably in July. But I was told by people at Microsoft that they doubted that this thing could be finished in time for that August deadline, and that they didn't understand how they were going to make that deadline. Hmm. And it's interesting that they met it fairly arbitrarily,
right?
It's
pretty finished.
Yeah. I thought they would make it all along. I also thought what they called RTM. Wouldn't be what in the past has been called RTM, right? What it is good enough for now, and we're going to fix it before launch.
Yeah,
you need an acronym for that.
What is finished, or maybe it's not. Maybe the word finished needs to be redefined. Windows Server 2012 R2. That's gold now, right?
Yes. And that team said several weeks ago that when we RTM, we're going to make the final bits available to volume licensees and our developers on launch. So they got that out of the way a couple weeks ago when Microsoft went public with the launch being October 18th. The server team said, okay, guys, just so you know now, and you aren't surprised, this is what's going to happen on launch day. You're not going to get the bits till then. So they took the path of, like, let's be clear and let's be upfront and let's just get this out of the way now.
So... By the way, though, I can't say how I've heard this, but some of Microsoft's biggest partners have, in fact, already gotten the RTM version of server.
Yeah. Do you mean the hardware partners, or?
I don't know what I mean. No, I mean, in other words, I don't mean server builders. If that, you know, not hardware makers. Yeah. No, I mean like partners.
Yeah.
Non-server maker partners.
Non-server guys. Yeah. Those guys. Yeah,
you know who you are, you non-server maker partners, you.
God, I hate you so much.
I'm a non-server maker, but I'm not a partner. So you see, it's got to have both, or it doesn't make any sense.
Oh, so wait. Do you have RTM, Leo?
No. No.
No.
How about ARM?
How about ARM?
So Windows 8.1 for ARM, also known as Windows 8.1 RT, or is it
also
Windows
known as Wart.
That also did RTM, and you are not going to get the bits even on your surfaces until the launch. Yep. So that did also. Oh yeah, and so the other things that are going to be out on launch day, besides Windows 8.1 and Windows Server 2012 R2, you're also going to have System Center 2012 R2 and Windows Intune, the next version, which we think is codenamed Wave E, like Edward. Yep. So all those things should be out on October 18th. Visual Studio, we don't know when 2013 is coming. I'm thinking earlier than October 18th, but maybe it won't be till October 18th.
If only there was someone who could tell us.
There might be someone around who knows, but that person in the audience probably isn't going to say.
Lock the doors, Leo.
Really?
He's like, I'm never coming back to watch the show.
Here they come. Bandit.
Hmm? Oh.
The password.
It's the first word that comes to mind.
The password is Bandit.
We should play this like Password.
Right.
Now, I'm going to tell you what the word is, and then Mary Jo has to guess it.
Okay.
What is Bandit?
Well, apparently, Bandit is the code name for a coming Nokia phablet.
I like the word Bandit better.
Six-inch phablet. Of course you do. It's a much better word than Lumia 1520 or whatever they're going to call this thing.
Bandit.
Does it look like a raccoon? Does it have a little
mask? God. Wouldn't that be awesome? Yeah.
That would be awesome, actually.
I want a smartphone that has an opposable thumb.
So I don't have to.
I want it to hold me, not the reverse.
I like
very
it.
Good.
We're going to skip over Balmer and the board because we did that, right?
Yep.
I guess this baby Bills is the same thing as we talked about splitting it up, right?
Yeah, about splitting up the company. Do you want to talk about the Nokia thing again or no?
Are we done?
Is we can talk a little more about that.
Please do.
Yeah. Okay.
Are they going to announce that at IFA? Is that why they're doing?
Yeah, so
IFA's September 4th, I think.
Yeah, IFA's next week,
right? Next week.
Nokia, we believe, is going to have a separate launch announcement, and we believe it's going to be on September 26th, and we believe it's going to be in New York City, although we don't know any of this for a fact. These are all rumors.
You're saying we believe a lot. Why is that?
Because we don't know. Neither Paul nor I have gotten any invites to anything.
But they've been doing that lately, right? You just went to a Nokia event in New York.
We did.
This is kind of the thing they do.
Yep. The rumor is that Nokia is going to announce two things on that day, that they're going to announce an ARM-based Windows RT tablet that's codenamed Sirius, Sirius, that's a 10.1-inch Qualcomm-based tablet. And the other rumor is they're going to announce this Bandit thing, this phablet, which is, we don't know as much about that, but maybe called the Lumia 1520, if rumors are correct.
Six-inch 1080p display, the rumors say.
Yeah. Yep. So 1080p would require a new Windows Phone update.
Oh, it wouldn't do that, huh?
Which would be GDDR3, which is around the right time, right?
Now, the rumor, and I'm quoting here, Windows Phone Central, is that it will have a 20-megapixel camera. So not the 41-megapixel pure view of the 1020, but still, I'd take 20.
Mm-hmm. Yep, I think so, too.
Yeah, I believe that. I believe this is a real device. The one who leaked the build, the name being Lumia 1520, is an account called @EvLeaks, and he's always very much on the money about phone screenshots, phone leaks.
He tweets
so I think that's probably correct.
What's interesting is you're seeing three columns of small tiles on this leaked picture.
Yep. That's also a rumored feature of the GDR3 Windows Phone 8 update is more tiles like that. So, yeah, you know, if Nokia does do this also on the same day, on September 26th, I think they'll be pre-announcing it and it won't be ready yet, because I don't think GDR3 is done yet, although it may just be in testing right now still. GDR3 is the kind of, it's another incremental update to Windows Phone 8 operating system that brings the 1080p. It brings the support for the 5 and 6 inch screen devices. So you would definitely need that release to do something that looks like this.
Cool.
Yeah.
Very, very interesting.
Yeah. And at IFA, next week, the rumors are there's going to be a lot of new Windows 8.1 optimized devices shown off by Microsoft's hardware partners. I haven't heard any specifics about what will be shown there, but the word on the street is they're going to show off a lot of cool new hardware next week. Maybe we'll see some more 8-inch tablets that are actually cool. I don't think we're going to see Microsoft's next Surfaces at IFA. They supposedly have something that Paul wrote about this week, Surface 2 and Surface 2 Pro, which are the successors, we think, to the ARM-based Surface RT and the Intel-based Surface Pro. But we don't think we're going to see those at the show next week. I bet not till October 18th. That would be my bet.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. I did hear that the Mini Surface, which I think is going to be called Surface Mini, will ship. It's like a Surface, but it's mini.
The 8-inch one?
Yeah, will ship later than the other two updated versions.
Microsoft,
they should call that the Xbox Surface.
There is a company that has a trademark on the word mini in regard to computers. I'd be a little careful. Maybe we don't want to get this.
I like Xbox Surface on that one.
There you go.
Yeah, sure.
Teeny, tiny, minimus, but mini.
Miniature.
They can call it the tick.
Although, all of the new little phones, aren't they the HTC One Mini and the Samsung Galaxy S4 Mini? So maybe Mini is generic.
Mini's safe.
But I just think that now Apple's been selling a Macintosh called the Mini for ages, and now they have the iPad Mini.
It's true.
I just would hate to see Microsoft lose yet another trademark battle.
Well, they do cave pretty quickly, so it's a safe bet.
GDR2. Well, wait a minute. Now, you said GDR3 would have... I'm confused.
It's understandable why you would be confused. So GDR2 is the current update. It's the one that finalized.
But nobody has it, or who has it?
No, actually, everyone's starting to get it.
Hmm.
So I would say that the only... HTC 8X has it. The only major customer group that doesn't have it is... those guys on AT&T, which is just a classic recurrence over and over again, but they will get it eventually as well.
I hate AT&T with a passion that burns flames of hell.
You know what? Usually AT&T gets it before Verizon. Verizon's usually the very last to get it, any kind of a Windows phone update, and we got ours yesterday on the 8X. We get them from Verizon.
So aside from the fact that AT&T still benefits from the release of exclusive phones earlier than Verizon. I would say that this year Verizon has proven itself to be a pretty damn good place to be if you have a Windows phone. I mean, they've been pretty good, this year. So, but anyway, GDR2 was finished months ago, and now it's finally getting rolled out. It does have some, it's an interim update, but I mean, if you look at GDR1, 2, and 3 collectively as the set of updates that were released to, for Windows Phone 8 over the first year of its life, not too shabby. There's some good stuff in there.
Yeah, let's recap what's in GDR2, because it was like April when they finished it, right? And now we're just getting it. So I made a list this week of what's in it. Substantial fixes to Xbox Music, right?
Yep.
It supposedly fixes a lot of problems there.
A lot of it's behind the scenes stuff. But the big one, and I noticed this when I wrote the Windows Phone book, was that there are different views in that software where you can see, artists or albums or playlists or whatever. And if you want to download those things to your phone, that works everywhere except in playlists. And I was like, what if you want to download a playlist? I mean, it's kind of strange. Like, there's no actual way to do that. And now in GDR2, there is.
What else? The CarDav, CalDav thing, so you can sync your Google contacts and calendar. Continue to sync them, I should say. Yep. The reduction in size of other storage, I think that fixed it for some people, but not everybody.
Well, and it, I guess it will also automatically fix itself over time. So supposedly that's fixed. Good.
Yeah. Data Sense, if your carrier allows you to have that. And FM radio, also if your carrier allows you to have that, right? Not all AT&T users don't have this, by the way. Marcus Lyons, Trombone for Hire, says, I have the GDR2 update 8X on AT&T, which is interesting.
Actually, that's interesting. I might have gotten that as well.
So maybe HTC got them to push it out fast.
Yeah. No, I think it's the Lumia.
Lumia 920, right, on AT&T that doesn't. Yeah. That's one phone that doesn't have it. But
AT&T. It could be
Nokia customers have it, right?
Yeah, according to Nokia, it's in testing at AT&T. I'll throw out a theory since we don't really know. It wouldn't surprise me that the reason that Nokia devices don't have it yet on AT&T, because Nokia also has a related Amber update, and those things might be bundled together, are bundled together, and perhaps that required extra testing at AT&T, and so they put it out for the non-Lumia phones, perhaps.
That would complicate things, yeah. T-Mobile doesn't have GDR2 yet. Says Balmer's ghost in the chat room.
It's not dead yet, Jim.
Not yet.
The 1020 comes pre-installed with GDR2, right? So Nokia has solved it for that. Yeah.
And the Amber update, which...
So it has both. So, you know, I don't know.
Let's see.
Again, testing schmesting. Why do they spend so much time just seeing... Just put it out.
Yeah, I do. By the way, I do have GDR2 on my 8X2.
Oh.
You do? Yep. I gotta make a plea here for photo of the day. Go to on Twitter to @SurfaceGeeks. You got to look at this guy's T-shirt.
Yep, is this the 365 thing?
I'm pulling it up right now.
All right, because he has
his shirt's out of date. We're 4% now.
His shirt's a little out of date, but I want one. Is a picture of him holding up a Windows
this is from
phone.
SurfaceGeeks.net, the blog. And apparently everybody got there before I did, unfortunately.
Sorry, Leo. I meant on Twitter. Sorry, I didn't say that clearly.
No, you said it, but then it links over to his blog, doesn't it? Yeah, there it is.
Because this guy has made an awesome shirt. I want one, but I want one with a little iron-on patch where you can change the number on it.
Oh, that's a good idea. Yeah, or maybe it could just be, a whiteboard on your chest. I am 3%.
Yeah. We are the, now we are the 4%.
Town population 3 and then
wait a minute. 4. Now he's got 4 tiles across on his. What's he doing?
He's thinking in advance, I think.
Is that a Photoshop or can you do that? No, you can do that. Oh.
Yeah, you can.
I'm a nitwit. Oh, now everybody's holding up their Windows phone in the studio.
No, Leo, it's not an iPhone. It's not just taller. It's also
You actually have some options and customizations you can do. We'll win you over.
Oh, those are the new little tiles. I got it. Yeah.
We're going to win you. I heard
they're
you
like tiles, but they're mini.
Leo followed the @Microsoft account this week on Twitter, and they were so happy they tweeted about it.
What?
Yeah, that's what they said.
It's like, what did I do?
I followed the Microsoft account, and they said, "Welcome, Leo Laporte. Finally, you're one of us."
Yep, that's what they said.
Joining the board.
Wow. No, they actually said they love.
They love Windows Weekly. I didn't even see this.
Yeah, they were so excited when you followed them on Twitter.
Well, thank you, Microsoft account. What does the hashtag tough love mean?
They mean
we're a little more honest about Microsoft than some people.
But still like our show.
You should listen. No, absolutely. Because you know what? Fundamentally, the reason you're so hard on them is because you love them so damn much.
That's right. We only want them to be better.
We're not hard on them. We're honest about them.
You're decent people. You're kind. Decent
people. People like me,
people
Leo.
People like you.
It's always a bad sign when someone has to tell you that.
You're a nice guy.
Right.
Let me move on here. I'm sorry. I'm a little distracted because okay. I can explain why I disappeared earlier and I'm now distracted again is the guys have arrived at my house with my new TV. And I'm coordinating this from afar And apparently they don't have any tools with them.
Why would they?
Well, they're supposed to take it out, set it up. So I don't, you know. It's one of those things, you spend enough money on a TV that they actually, you know, do some stuff for you.
Sure.
Yeah. And I spend enough money on this TV. Hey, before we get to our picks of the week, let's talk about bleep drive. Skeet drive. Zoom drive.
What drive are you speaking of, Leo?
Drive. SkyDrive. SkyDrive. Oh,
yeah. Those guys.
Those guys. Upgraded. Wait a minute. SkyDrive Pro is now 100 gigs?
Well, no. So there's two things here, okay. Right? SkyDrive and SkyDrive Pro?
Yeah.
SkyDrive Pro is the service that ships as part of Office 365, the business versions, not the consumer-oriented SkyDrive. So previously they had a 7 gig limit per user for SkyDrive Pro storage. Now it's a 25 gig minimum, and you can upgrade to 50 or 100 gigabytes by paying for it, obviously, per user per month or whatever. So big changes there. And actually other changes too. I mean, off the top of my head, I want to say they added versioning support. So up to, I think it's up to 10 versions of a document per document. And what else? Wasn't there something else? I feel like I should just know this. Oh, I have rebooted, so I don't have any of my stuff open. There was other stuff. But anyway, that's the big
thing. That's more than enough. Thank you very much.
Yeah. And on the consumer side, the regular SkyDrive, skydrive.com, they added OCR capabilities, but in sort of a limited context. And so if you use Windows Phone in conjunction with SkyDrive, you can automatically back up your photos and other stuff to SkyDrive. And for photos, those things go to a folder called Camera Roll. And so if you have a photo in Camera Roll that you uploaded from the phone automatically, not a photo you might have just copied into that folder for some reason, I guess those don't work, it will do an automatic optical character recognition on any text that might be in the picture. So if you take a picture of a menu, a sign, whatever it is, next to the photo, there will be the text. You can copy and paste it and then use it however you want.
You can see so I'm jumping up and down over there.
Can you?
I can't see you at all because my Skype is frozen. So.
Can you, Paul, use that OCR thing on photos in your SkyDrive camera roll that you had from before, or just new ones?
So that's a good question. I don't know. So I'm told that if you just copy a photo in there, it's not going to work. It has to be from Windows Phone. And by the way, if you use Windows Phone, you might know that it supports a feature called Bing Vision. Right. That does optical character recognition, among other things. And I wonder if there's some kind of software on the phone that, has something to do with it. I don't know why it requires that. And I'm looking at, I've heard from people that, it's not there. And maybe it's one of those things that rolls out over time. Because I've looked at this in my own, because I take lots of pictures of things that have text in them. And I've not actually seen it on any of my photos either. So I'm not sure. I'm looking for one now to see if I can find it.
Yeah, I was looking for one of my
And it's all server-side, right?
Yeah, it's in the web interface, yeah.
Cool.
Yeah, I don't see it on any of mine yet still. So it might be something that's rolling out over time.
Yeah.
Google
I have a little. While you're looking, I have a little breaking news to throw into the show.
Yes.
Okay, good. Sorry.
Bloomberg is reporting Microsoft is discussing a strategic investment in Foursquare, according to their sources.
So this brings up a much more important...
Oh, it's so funny because Dennis, that's really funny. Dens of Foursquare posted a picture a few days ago of a cake and said, big news coming. And I speculated, well, maybe they're getting acquired. But this is even better. Get some money and keep
So this is from Dina, right?
Right, from Dina Bass.
Need to have a conversation with Dina because her Twitter account is like schizophrenic. Like one second she's talking about stuff like that, and then she says something that I take to be about soccer because I never understand the terminology, and I have no idea what she's talking about.
She's a soccer nut.
It must be it's soccer, right? I assume it's soccer.
It is.
So what the value of Foursquare is pretty clear to Microsoft. This is good. This is like buying Yelp or something. It's good location data, lots of it. They've been collecting it for a long time with recommendations.
Is there a phrase like location data, location data, location data?
Yeah.
Well, remember this week in the Windows 8 store, we got Foursquare, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's right.
So that's another The plot thickens.
So what? Tell me what, it's just a strategic investment? Did they say amounts?
Yeah,
or?
The story's not out yet. This is just from a tweet Dina Bass did, but she just said that so far. And, you know, it reminds me, you know, Microsoft early on did a strategic investment in Facebook, right? And everyone thought they were crazy when they did it.
No, smart move.
Nope, smart move.
So Yammer.
It's like a fuss.
Somebody in the chat room, Texas MCSC says Yammer plus Skype plus Foursquare. These are all, I think, smart strategic acquisitions for the
online. By the way, that company right there would be an awesome baby, Bill.
Yeah, right. Everything you need. Yep. Texting, video and phone calls, location information. That's a good acquisition. Yep. I think that's a good deal for both Foursquare, which has been struggling a little bit, I think. Trying to reinvent itself and Microsoft. Mm. It'd be funny if Dennis Crowley became the new CEO. He's young. He's hip.
Oh, man.
He plays soccer.
Okay. He's the triple threat.
He's a triple threat.
But what does the guy know about Forefront and System Center?
Nothing. Right. Like, he wrote Foursquare originally. It was such a mess.
Did he write it?
But he worked at Google. This is their second acquisition. They wrote... Yep. A Dodgeball, which was another location program, which Google bought and promptly buried, and then left.
And they left because of that, and that's where they started.
Created Foursquare.
Yeah.
Very interesting. I think that's I have to say that's a smart move, I think. Probably not expensive either.
Yeah. I mean, they're not talking about buying them, to be clear. They're just talking about making it.
Give them some money. Same thing they did with Facebook. Now you have this data pumping into Bing.
They should buy them, and then they could let them run Microsoft.
I don't think Dennis wants to.
What about Hadoop, Paul? Think of the Hadoops.
Think of the Hadoop. Right. But that is an argument for splitting it up, by the way, because then you can have people with expertise in a particular area, and they don't have to worry about Microsoft is such a beast.
Yeah, it's like that idea sounds great. Too bad about the whole Windows thing, huh?
I know. How did that work out?
I mean, that must happen all the time.
Hey, before we get to our picks, tips, numbers, whatever you guys want, beer, enterprise solutions, code names, let's talk about Netflix. We want to invite everybody who is not yet a member of Netflix, all two of you, to sign up for Netflix. Thousands of TV episodes. We were talking before the show began about House of Cards. 9 Emmy nominations, one of the best shows on television. Netflix produced it. Arrested Development, the new season, and Netflix produced it. I'm really enjoying Orange is the New Black. They've added a new feature in the Netflix software, which I really like. I don't know if it's on Xbox yet. But and this is great because I have several people in my family on my Netflix account. And, Abby keeps watching Battlestar Galactica. I've seen it all, so I don't want her, Battlestar Galactica in my peanut butter. So now we have different logins for each family member. You click your login, you get recommendations customized to you. Netflix, I should explain if anybody doesn't know, is a fabulous streaming solution for great content. $7.99 a month. It's cheap. You get thousands to choose from. Great 1080p performance. They work with the Chromecast. It's beautiful. Of course, an Xbox 360, PS3, Nintendo Wii. You can watch it right on most TVs. All Blu-ray players, all of that will have Netflix. In fact, really, there's no device shipping these days that doesn't. And you can have so much fun. Netflix is great for catching up on series you missed. Go back and watch Breaking Bad or 24, Glee, or Nip and Tuck. Great movies like the Breakfast Club. Oh, man, I want to watch The Breakfast Club. Hey, 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 don't you forget about me. The 80s are back, baby. Give it a try, netflix.com/twit. I've got 30 days free waiting for you. And tell your friends and grandma and everybody. Grandma's about the last person probably doesn't know about Netflix. netflix.com/twit. 30 days free coming your way. Ladies and gentlemen, we commence the back of the book portion of the show with Paul's software. This is the back of the book.
Yeah.
Software pick of the week.
That's true. I added to this. I don't know if you saw the update, but the main pick is MyWeek for Windows Phone 8. This is courtesy of Tom Edwards. It's $1.49, but it adds your calendar, like the week of your calendar, to the top of the start screen, kind of overlays it on top of the background graphic. It's kind of a cool looking thing and kind of a neat idea. I find the Windows Phone notification stuff on the lock screen to be a little on the weak side, and this is a kind of a nice expansion of one of those things you would want to look at pretty quickly on your phone. So
good.
Kind of a neat idea. But just before we started the podcast, Microsoft announced an update for Halo Spartan Assault, which is that touch-based version of Halo that's available for Windows 8, Windows RT, and for Windows Phone 8. And there's actually a bunch of upgrades going on here. So first of all, everyone who owns the game on either platform is going to get 5 new levels for free as part of a kind of an expansion pack, and that's cool. Starting tomorrow, they're going to come up with a demo version of it. One of the issues that people have with the game is that it's pretty expensive, and through today, there's been no way to sample the game without actually buying it. And so this will give you a chance to trial the game before you decide whether or not you want to pay for it. So that's cool. And then the other big part, the other big kind of part of the upgrade is that on Windows Phone, this game, like many high-end games, required 1 gigabyte of RAM. And so it wasn't available on a lot of those low-end phones that are now becoming very popular in the Windows Phone world. But as of this update, you can now install it on 512 megabyte devices.
Wow.
So it'll work on virtually all Windows phones, really. I mean, that's, I think kind of technically you could have 256, but you don't really see those in the real world. So, yeah. So good stuff. So
I'm a big Halo fan. How is it on touch? Is it good?
I love it. And actually, to be honest, I like it better on Windows than I like it on the phone. There's something about having the screen size for some reason works better for me, you know, personally. So my recommendation is, if you have both, do it on the tablet. But obviously, if you don't, then you don't really have a choice. But right. I happen to think it's better on the tablet. It's good.
It's a good game. Good game. Good game, man. Software tip of the week.
Yeah, I'm still struggling to kind of finalize a write-up of this. But I had written sort of a mini review of the Lumia 520. And because I have so many Windows phones, it's kind of odd that I would choose to use this device going forward, but I'm actually going to keep using it. And I'm not going to use it as a phone. I'm going to use it as a media device, like a media player. And the reason is that it's such a cute little excellent device, but it's $99, so it's really inexpensive. You can get a 64 gigabyte micro SD card, so you can put a bunch of content on there for about $60 on Amazon or whatever. And that for that $160, you get it's a 64 gigabyte media device, right? A 64 gigabyte iPod Touch costs $400. That's an incredible value. So on Windows Phone, and on this Windows Phone, for example, on my own 520, not that most people would have all of these things at the same time, but it obviously does the Xbox Live, the Xbox Music stuff, including support for Xbox Music Pass and the availability of all your cloud collection stuff that you might have done on your PC just shows up on the phone automatically. So it's got all that. But it supports Pandora. It supports Nokia Music, which is a really low-cost alternative to some of these other music services. It supports Rhapsody. It supports Spotify. If you live in the United States or some other markets, you can do podcasting natively through the built-in music and video app. If you don't, there are a bunch of third-party podcast apps. It supports Audible. I use this to listen to Audible books. It supports Kindle. You can read ebooks. There are hundreds of just Xbox Live games, including now Halo, Spartan Assault, because this is a 512 megabyte device. It's a Nokia device. And so it comes with all of those Here apps, like Here Maps, Here Drive, Here Transit, and so forth. And because you can download the maps and use them offline, this thing is basically a free GPS. And I tested this in the car the other day because you can buy this thing off contract for $99. You don't
off
have to
contract,
connect to
a $99.
Yes, $99 and you own it. Don't have to have a connection. At home, on Wi-Fi, you can download the maps, put it in your car. It's a GPS. I mean, it's such
a good deal. It's
an amazingly versatile device.
Yeah.
$99.
It's kind of, this is like the iPod Touch. The idea is that you don't need a phone, really. You just use it as a device.
I mean, if you wanted to use this as a phone, of course you can. And AT&T sells it through their Go and Phone program, which is their kind of pay-as-you-go plan. So there's some low-cost options there, too, if you do want to use it as a phone. Obviously, it's a great phone, if that's what you want. But it's just such an affordable, excellent, really capable device. It's amazing. And so, there are probably some number of people, for example, that are holding out with their Zune HD because they love it so much. And this stuff is starting to go away. The Zune software is starting to go away. The Zune marketplace capabilities are going down. They can kind of see the light at the end of the tunnel. What do I do post-Zune? And for a lot of people, this is an incredible option there, but not just for those guys. I mean, even for people who already have a phone, you just want to a really inexpensive second device you can do all the media stuff on and not take up the battery life or the space or whatever on your main phone.
What's the screen on that Lumia 520? Is it pretty good?
It's beautiful. Yeah, I mean, it's 800 by 480, which is kind of, and I just broke mine. No, but it's, which is kind of,
it's tough.
Because it's a Lumia, see, it's fine.
It's tough. It's fine.
I could bounce this thing off the floor. It'd be fine.
Yeah.
Cool. Yeah, it's a beautiful screen. It's a beautiful device. It's an amazing little device. Really, really nice.
Oh, man. Time for our enterprise pick of the week. That's a good tip. I like that, Paul. Mary Jo Foley.
Yeah. So, It's tough pickings for enterprise in August when you cover Microsoft because they don't do a lot of big enterprise announcements. That's why I was kind of surprised this week when I saw a post on Microsoft Server and Tools blog. It has a really horrible title. It's called PaaS for the Modern Web, which means Platform as a Service for the Modern Web. But when you click on this post, you get a really worthwhile read. This is all about what Microsoft's Windows Azure for websites is. And that's one of the parts of Windows Azure that I think the name just kind of throws people off. Like, what is that thing? This post is about the server side complement of it, which is websites for Windows Server. So what Microsoft did is they took a bunch of the capabilities that before used to only be on Windows Azure, and they've moved them over so that you can also run them in-house on your Windows Server. This is one of those things that got moved over as part of what Microsoft calls the Windows Azure Pack. And one of these capabilities is called Websites for Windows Server. Man, what a set of tongue twisters here.
What?
Yeah. This post is really good because it goes into how if you're somebody who wants to build a web app to be hosted on Windows Azure or to be hosted on Windows Server, you can work with an application gallery with templates and a whole set of tools that they've got all set up for you, and how you can actually make these hostable websites work if you use these new capabilities. So instead of trying to explain this whole post, because it goes into quite a bit of depth, it has screenshots and all, I say go to the Microsoft Server and Tools blog, which you can find through any Bing browsing capability that you may have. And check it out. It's dated August 28th. It's from Brad Anderson, and it's called PaaS in the Modern Web, What's New in 2012 R2. So if you want to know what Azure Websites is, you should click on this post.
Well, it's a powerful self-service platform for developers and a flexible hosting solution for IT. We're talking PaaS for the Modern Web.
So it's good. It's good whether you're an IT pro or you're a dev. It can show you what to do and how this can work if you're interested in testing it out yourself.
But is it flexible, Mary Jo? Is it scalable?
It's flexible. It's secure? Fast and fluid. It's all of those things. All
right. Very nice. And code name pick of the week.
Yeah, this is a fun one, actually. This is from the ancient history files of code names. The code name is Sundown.
Gordon Lightfoot. 1972.
Yeah, I had never heard this code name, and someone sent it in to me and said, did you know the code name Sundown? And it turns out what Sundown was Dave Cutler's project to port Windows NT to 64-bit.
Oh, and so they were saying, like, here, we're going to take down Sun?
Yeah.
With a workstation?
The codename's fun because it was all about Microsoft trying to compete with Sun, which had Solaris, Unix, workstations, and servers. And now we all know what happened to Sun. So it's funny, Sundown came to Sun instead of to Microsoft in the end. But that's a historical code name of interest.
Actually, you could make a pretty strong case that that's exactly what it did, that it put Sun out of business.
Pretty much.
We had Jonathan Schwartz on Triangulation a few months ago. And we were talking about that. Yeah. And he was the guy who kind of saw the sunsetting of Sun. And he said that's what happened is that low-cost Windows servers meant you didn't have to buy a fancy Sun workstation anymore.
Mm-hmm.
We couldn't compete.
Yep.
64-bit. I think Dave Cutler nailed it.
I think he nailed it. Yep.
So I hope he had a nice bottle of Dieu du Ciel Rosé des Biscuits.
Yeah, this is awesome. Last week I was in Toronto.
I want to hear you pronounce this beer.
I will. This beer. So, you know, Paul always talks about Fin du Monde, right? Which is one of Dieu du Ciel's beers.
Oh, it is. Oh, it's the same
Quebec.
Company. Okay.
Yes. So the beer I had last week that was really awesome, another Dieu du Ciel beer, is Rosé d'Hibiscus. That's my best attempt at a French pronunciation.
Probably d'Hibiscus.
I have not ever had, I've not even heard of this.
Rosé d'Hibiscus, pinkish hibiscus.
Oh, such a good beer. It's a wheat beer, but it's made with hibiscus petals or flowers. And so it gives it this pinkish tinge. And it was really fantastic. There are so many awesome beer bars in Toronto, I have to tell you.
Oh, yeah. They live in Montreal.
Yeah, I was in Toronto, actually. But they have a lot of the Quebec beers and also their own Torontarian. What would you say?
Torontarian.
Torontarian.
Please, God, let it be Torontarian.
No, it's Torontonian.
Torontonian.
It's like a new sect of the church.
Torontarian. I'm in the Torontarian sect.
If you find yourself in Toronto, I recommend Bar Volo. They have so many awesome craft beers. And this is where I drank that one.
Bar Volo. It's funny because this is like the Red Zinger of beers.
Yeah, it was.
Hibiscus is in Red Zinger.
Yep. That's kind of what it tastes like. If you like Red Zinger tea,
I love it.
Like this.
It's got a little tart, going on. That sounds good for a beer.
It was nice.
People are getting weird with the beer thing, though. I mean, come on. They've got some funny beers.
We're going to win you over yet.
Rigor Mortis is one of their beers.
Yeah, they have so many good ones.
Snow White, Blanche-Neige.
Maudite.
By the way, I listened to a podcast, actually, I guess it was a radio show that turned into a podcast about craft beer and how big it is in the United States now and everything. And this guy did make a good point. You know, beer is kind of hitting this point where it's almost like wine where we taste
it's
it.
Very much so.
Talk about it, But the big difference is you could spend hundreds, thousands of dollars on a bottle of wine and possibly one you would never even drink. But the most you're going to spend on a glass of beer is $5.
That's a good point.
He's like, it doesn't matter how good it is. It's never going to be super expensive. And that's
except for beer collectors. These guys are nuts.
So you can get a very expensive bottle of beer?
Yeah,
you should. Can
spend. The problem is you don't want to age it, right? Beer, you never age beer.
No, you don't age beer. You drink it.
And no, that's what's great. Some beers you age.
Really?
You age stouts and porters, especially bourbon-aged ones. You can keep those for years.
Really?
Yeah, and they get better.
Huh. I don't want to do that. I want to drink beer.
Oh, man.
In fact,
have
I
want
to drink beer right now. Are we almost done here?
Yes, we are. Time to have a beer.
So now comes the rut time.
Right. When you...
here's to good friends. Tonight is something special. The beer you pour's got to do more. Get me drunk.
You remember the song.
Real quick. Let it be Miller time. My friend Paul Thurrott writes for the Supersite for Windows. What am I saying? He is the man at the Supersite for Windows. WinSupersite.com.
I'm just the man. Why don't we simplify that sentence, Leo?
He's the man.
He's
the man. He also has the Windows Phone Book online, free, WindowsPhoneBook.com. Help finish it up. He is an analyst for Penton Media. Don't forget, they're going to have that big event very soon. If you go to Paul's site, WinSupersite.com, you can sign up for a special edition of Windows Weekly that they're going to do out there in Las Vegas as part of the IT Dev Connections conference there. If you're going out anyway, this is worth going. Mandalay Bay, September 30th through October 4th, 180 sessions, 100 speakers, and you can see Paul and Mary Jo in person, and you can see them do a Windows Weekly. Have we arranged that yet?
No, but we should figure that out.
Remind me. Do you have, as soon as you get a date and stuff, I'll contact Tom Merritt, have him see if he can come out and host that out there. We can just
We don't want Tom Merritt.
Oh, who do you want? Who would you like?
No,
you can have anybody you want. Do you want those Loudermilk twins? You want them?
No, screw those guys.
I'm just kidding.
No, Tom would be great.
Wait, really? The Loudermilks took a job with Microsoft?
Both of them work for Microsoft, yeah.
You better not do that.
Nah, they're still awesome, though. They're still awesome guys, even though they're working for Microsoft.
Oddly enough, an offer is not forthcoming, Leo.
Hold out for CEO. That would be my suggestion.
Yeah.
I hear there's an opening.
I don't have to be CEO, but I wouldn't mind being a henchman for the CEO.
I'm his right-hand man, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, I want to be like the Darth Vader of this empire.
Your lack of faith in Windows 8.1 disappoints me.
Mary Jo Foley writes about Microsoft, and really, I mean, scoop this week. Congratulations. Her interview with Steve Ballmer, must read at allaboutmicrosoft.com. And, of course, we do Windows Weekly on Thursdays. We are talking about moving it to a different day, probably next year. I guess, I gather you got the memo.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. We heard that.
I hope that's okay. Wednesdays. I know you can't do Mondays, but Wednesdays would work for you.
Yeah, I like Wednesdays. I think Wednesdays could be good.
Middle of the week. Yeah, that's good. Put a nice light on it. that way I could get a couple of days off. We're trying to figure out how I can
get... You know what, Leo? Screw your days off, okay?
I have. The last 8 years, I have done nothing but screw my days off.
No, it's completely...
Two in a row? Yeah, what are you, I don't crazy? Really, oh, my God.
What are you, French? What do you think? You just get days off now?
Anyway, for the time being, 11 a.m. Pacific... That's 2 p.m. Eastern Time, 1800 UTC on Thursdays for the live edition with Paul, Mary Jo, and loads of fun. The edited on-demand version is available after the fact. It takes us a few hours to get those together at twit.tv/WW for Windows Weekly. And, of course, if you subscribe, you get it automatically. The Zoom Marketplace, anywhere you get podcasts, that'd be the place to go. Paul, Mary Jo, thank you so much. We'll see you next week on Windows Weekly.